I said, no, I really smoked it. And I also inhaled, unlike some people claim.
Hey, everyone. Wade here with Cannabiz, joined by, of course, Sean and Craig and the Cannabiz crew. Summer Hummer 2024. And we're joined by a very special guest, Kevin Jones. Kevin is the head, the CEO and the founder of the Hemp Hound agency here in the UK. Kevin, thanks for joining us. Please explain to the guys and to all of us, you know, what your involvement in with cannabis, how long you've been doing it, and how you got into the wonderful greenery of this business.
Bagpipes.
Bagpipes. Well, that's a bong in itself.
Makes sense.
I started playing bagpipes at the age of 11. I went to a military boarding school, and I didn't know then that actually you use hemp thread. I knew what hemp thread was, but I didn't realize that it came from the good plant. So that's kind of my first contact with cannabis. Then at the age of 16, I decided that I might make a good rapper. Unfortunately, I could only write rhymes about cannabis. I wasn't, you know, one of those going around with a Glock, you know, slapping hoes or anything like that. And then from that point, I was in Germany at the time. I came back to the UK, and I saw a marked difference in the kind of European versus UK culture that surrounded cannabis. So after shedding a tear or two, shall we say, basically I decided to go on a mission to learn as much as I could about the plant. That led into crazy worlds where I pretended to be green fingered, but then I kind of got fed up of feeling like a criminal just before I met my wife. And as it goes, she's got baby kneecaps, and you know, we started talking about hemp because of the pain that causes when a nerve is twanged by a paletta or whatever it's called. I'm not a biologist, but basically from there we created a company called Lovebud in 2016. That didn't really get going, but it was at that point I ended up working for the Cannabis Trades Association over here as their member point of contact. So I was basically advising all companies on anything you could shake a stick at, from alternative farming practices to license applications to product designs, regulatory requirements. And then in at the end of 2020, the Cannabis Trades Association decided that they didn't need me in my position anymore, which was a little bit weird. So basically I took what they said that they didn't need and created the Hemp Hound agency, where I basically still indulge in a spot of industry commentary, a level of investigative journalism, and provide an advisory and signposting service.
Now, obviously, we're Canadians. You know, we've had it legal since 2015, and it's, you know, medical, apparently. I mean, I'm based in the UK. Medical's legal, but you got to be tricky. Kevin, give us a breakdown. What's the UK looking like weed-wise as Germany and everyone else starts to legalize it? What are we doing?
I feel like there's a level of hope that is starting to manifest itself. You know, beforehand, we've always had the kind of frustrations of why aren't the politicians looking at the potential tax revenue? Why are they judging it as a criminal matter for possession, as opposed to, you know, a medical or a different kind of angle? Now, what you guys might not know is that when medicinal cannabis was legalized in November 2018, steady polls have been managed. And it turns out that from that point, there's been an over 50% approval rating for a conversation on cannabis. Now, I'm not going to say legalize or decriminalize because, you know, they're two different kind of focuses. But equally, with them combined and people realizing that there's more to cannabis, it's not that evil plant that we've all been told about, people are starting to realize that, yeah, maybe it should be legalized, because you know it's not just the ability to get blazed. There's the environmental impacts, the alternatives to plastics and the likes of that can be sourced. People are starting to see that, and that's the beautiful thing. We're just waiting for the politicians to kind of turn around, stop saying the word skunk, and actually have that conversation. Is it far away? I don't think it is. But how far is not far away?
Sure. And I guess with, you know, you've got, I've just been reading Northern Ireland, where apparently in Belfast, the medical community is being embraced more. There's more prescriptions being written. They're actually starting to do smoking lounges. Is there something in the water in Northern Ireland that's happening that we can't? Because I can smell it. I live in London. I can smell it on the streets every day. It's growing. There's grow houses growing. The underground, the Albanians are winning. I'm not gonna lie, they're winning. So what are we doing? What can we do here with that?
Do you know what? It's a weird thing. Sometimes I think some of the countries tied into the UK have more control over their direction than you would ordinarily think. Scotland, for example, there's a few times in different kind of satellite areas where it's almost like they've stuck the finger up at Westminster and
Scotland
decided
doing
to do
that?
their own
What? They
thing.
don't do that.
Oh yeah, that's one of the reasons why I love the people.
I
It was
love
before I
them
started playing the
too.
bagpipes, but yeah, I'm not quite certain with Northern Ireland, because when it comes to my area of focus with cannabis as a food, historically Northern Ireland have actually been a bit of a pain in the ass.
Wow.
But you know, if they're getting to a point of acceptance over there, you would like to think that that will whittle down. And if Scotland were to do the same thing, because they are challenging their control over drugs, over that which is, you know, held by the Home Office, you know, these things can kind of start chiseling away at the pillars of control and lead to potential change in England. So you know, it's nice to hear that things are changing, or attitudes are changing, certainly in Northern Ireland. Scotland, I think there's always been the attitude for change, certainly when you look at their drug death totals. You know, is it going to filter down to the England? Yes, it's just waiting for the politicians to be brave enough to actually come out and say, let's talk.
I was going to say, I think there's some optimism with what's happening. You know, you talk about the legalization of medical in 2018, and then the ongoing polls. If you look at, you know, kind of the history with Canada, you know, we kind of went through the same progression, right? We had a legalization for medicinal purposes. As Wade's, you know, kind of highlighted, all of a sudden you start smelling it on all the corners. You know, especially cities like Vancouver, which pretty much anybody could get a prescription from their pharmacist for this stuff. And you know, and then I think, you know, in probably the same way, though I wasn't quite aware of it, you know, the government's probably polling all along about how popular this is going to be. It's an election potential issue, which the liberals utilized. And all of a sudden it's legalized, and now it's ubiquitous. It's everywhere. And you kind of forgot when it wasn't legalized, because you don't even think about it anymore. And I think with, you know, what's happening in places like Germany, this probably UK is not so far behind, if what you're saying is true, as far as, you know, going from legalization and they're pulling this stuff. At some point it's going to be on some sort of election issue.
But there is a big issue here. The elephant in the room, and that elephant is GW Pharmaceuticals. One of the reasons why we've not had a conversation is because in 1998, Dr. Jeffrey Guy, co-founder of GW, provided the government, or the Home Office specifically, a 22-point plan to regulate and control cannabis in the UK. Now, I believe that one of the points in that plan was to avoid the conversation of cannabis with the public. And I do hear through reliable means that actually the main intent of GW is in any way to kind of restrict the potential move towards recreational. And you can kind of understand why, because they're dealing with cannabinoids. You know, how hard would it be for a bud tender to say, well, this has got more than just two cannabinoids in? It's also got terpenes, flavonoids, it's phytochemicals, so you're eating as well as healing. You know, there's a lot more to it. And we do see that a lot around the world as well. There seems to be regulatory movement that certainly benefits those kind of sativa X's and Epidiolexes. And yeah, that in itself is the big sticking point for the UK. I've actually tried to petition the Home Office to get a copy of that 22-point plan, but they won't provide it.
So you're saying 26 years or 26 years ago, this was written, a 22-point plan that basically outlined, and this is a government that they're still holding to this, that this is, and one of the points is we don't want recreational cannabis?
I believe so. I know the 22-point plan exists. It's documented in a document called the Medicinalization of Cannabis.
Wow. Right?
And I can send you a copy of this.
Yeah, please. Yeah, I'd love to see this.
But what it does spell is the creation of a public-private partnership, which makes sense. I mean, we have craziness over here to the point that it seems every now and then there's a whole kind of rotation of police raids, right? Now, what's interesting is that whilst police will turn around and say, this is illegal, we'll clamp down on you, what they've been doing is sending all seized cannabis to GW Pharmaceuticals to be processed.
Really?
No, this is absolutely genuine.
Stolen weed goes back into the system?
Yep, I can tell you, right, there's four major times that I've been able to catalogue. The first time is in 2004, right? That's when the British government started taking an interest into CBD. And interestingly, 2 years later, GW tried to patent CBD supplemental and cosmetic products, literally 9 years before there was any kind of industry in the UK. The second one was 2008. Now, the UK, were you in over here then?
Yes, I was living here. Yeah, in 2008, I was.
So do you remember cannabis was a class C and then it got raised up to a class B drug?
I remember you had to get it in Camden, not near a bridge.
I was getting stuff from there at some points as well.
Yeah, well, it's up someone's stuff.
The ACMD, the Advisory Committee on the Misuse of Drugs, right? They were asked to look at cannabis, specifically strong strains, surrounding a real public concern, which involved skunk.
Gotcha. Right?
Now, the ACMD basically said, look, we see no fears. We don't believe that cannabis needs to be rescheduled upwards. However, the government dismissed that, right, under orders of Gordon Brown, who was Prime Minister then. Jackie Smith raised cannabis back to a Class B on the basis of a study conducted with weed that was given to GW by the Home Office.
Right? Wow.
And it was all to do with CBD content. Well, that's what they say, CBD content. But the interesting thing is I've seen pictures of these samples, right? And one of the batches that was received in 2018, I'll tell you about that in a second because it's very, very interesting. Basically, they were getting boxes and boxes, but they were testing 0.25 of a gram to see how much CBD was in there because that reflected what's normally put in a spliff in the UK. Like, and it's the big question there is, well, what you're doing with the rest?
Yeah, what happened that with that giant lovely box? Because we have those at the airport. You wonder when those things at the airport where you give your weed in Canada, you're supposed to drop your weed in. We're like, where does that go? Who gets that weed?
There's obviously a leprechaun at the bottom.
There should be.
There with a packet of rips and
just a small person who's just stoned as fuck. So. All right, this is all confusing. GW Pharmaceuticals. All right, is this Theresa May's husband? Is this the one he's involved in?
Oh, when you say Theresa May's husband, that's not who you should be looking at.
Who should we be looking at? May. Kevin Theresa May, former right? Prime Minister, yeah. the dancing queen.
Yeah, I tell you what, a lot of people look at her husband, right? But they don't realize that as Home Secretary, she would have known about GW quite a lot with license renewals and samples being sent left, right, and center. Right?
Is GW a public company?
No, but as a result of a public-private partnership, at some point, because of the use of public resources, there should be a return. But when that return happens is anyone's guess, considering they've only got two viable medications, and yet they've got announced commercial interests with 15 cannabinoids.
So pretty much, it's not going to happen with it. No, go ahead, John, but they just seem like they're controlling crap.
No, but I was going to say is, isn't this stuff covered under your freedom of information? Like, can't you get access to this, make these requests? And it's been 6 years.
I've been on the case. I've got 80% of a book written about this, and there's a lot of things that have been happening in real time as I've been trying to accrue a lot of the information. Now, a lot of these government departments will say, "Well, this is 1998. We're talking paper records, right?" You get 24 hours or £600 for each FOI. Right. So if it's paper records, you've got to pay for someone to go and pick up the right boxes and then pay another person to go through the documents to find it and then pay someone else who decides whether any of it needs to be redacted or not before it even gets to me. And that is one of the issues that I've been having. I know a lot of companies that are working with the government, and they seem to be working on a game plan that gives GW dominance whilst providing the perception of no monopoly arising. So most of the information is there. Most of it is in the public domain and easily grabbable. Like I said, I've got 80% of a book on this, and I'm just waiting to finish off the last few bits and pieces. But the government, they don't want to talk about cannabis, and they'll do it
No.
on their time. And one of the levels of proof I've got on that is actually from a different Freedom of Information request. It was to determine whether or not any public interest tests had been conducted by the Home Office when being approached with a petition for some kind of conversation on cannabis. Now, regardless of what it is, you would expect that if there's the public interest, then there would be a public interest test being applied to those petitions. However, turns out there isn't. At
Wow.
the end of the day, it's up to the petitions committee whether or not they accept a petition. Right. But when it comes to cannabis, the petitions committee told me directly in a different FOI that actually it's the Home Office who deals with all of that. And because we've had a complete blanket denial on any conversation, that in itself shows that there's a bit more of an agenda there than, shall we say, public safety.
No, we got a new government here after 14 years in the UK. Do you think it's business as usual with Labour? Are they just gonna do what the Conservatives is and basically keep allowing GW Pharmaceuticals to do what they do? Because it seems like it's got
Well,
political hands up its butt.
when you talk about the public-private partnership, that was actually agreed by a Labour government,
Oh,
Blair, right?
okay.
But it was negotiated by a Tory government before Blair with John Major. In fact, John Major was the one who pointed at a guy who's basically a Lord William Waldegrave. He in 1971 worked with Victor Rothschild at the policy department for the Tories, and they basically ironed out the concept of a public-private partnership. In 1991, Waldegrave had become an MP for Bristol West, and he was actually made the Chancellor of the Duchy of Lancaster with responsibility over government R&D. Now, he is actually quite tied into all of this, to the point that if you were to check files for the sale of GW to Jazz, you'll see that he left with 193,000 shares and gained about £40 million. I think I'm slightly sidetracking myself here.
No,
Oh yeah, that's it. No. Are Labour going to be any different? Here's the cookie. Both of them talk intently about skunk, right? And I don't know if you know the history around skunk.
Well, when I've had it here, it's just what I've seen, because in my growing experience, it's excessive nitrogen being put into your soil to skew the plant to the point that it gives a skunky taste. But I've smoked it here and it's absolutely disgusting. It just tastes of nitrogen. Artificial, those nitrogen sticks. I would see people put nitrogen sticks in and go, it's skunking. It makes it stronger. It's like it doesn't make it stronger.
I've never heard of that, but if you check out someone called Sam Skunkman, his real
Okay.
name is David Watson, and he's a CEO for Phytopharm, not Phytopharm, Hortifarm, right?
Okay.
He actually developed skunk in America in the 1970s, and then came over to Holland and set up a big kind of breeding genetic kind of program. Now, before I went to Germany and tried to become a rapper, skunk was everywhere in the UK. you'd fall over it. But when I came back in 98, right, Skunk was starting to disappear because I think White Widow had won 1996 Cannabis Cup for Best Effect Grass. I think the year before was Jack Kira, the year after was New York City Diesel. And people were starting to kind of see that there was more to life than Skunk. So in 2004, when we had the declassification down to Class C before attempts to rise again, all of a sudden people started to be able to grow in the UK with less weight on their shoulders, shall we say, right? But again, Skunk was disappearing. But at the same time, there's something, there's an English term when a word gets skunked. Have you ever come across that?
Mm-hmm.
It's where it originally means something and then it's perverted to mean something else.
Yeah.
And that almost is what happened with Skunk, because Skunk was a strain or a series of strains, because you had Skunk number one, Special Skunk, Big Bud Skunk. You had a whole shebang of them, right? But they all disappeared. And then all of a sudden, the government and academia decided that Skunk meant any cannabis that was above 14% THC. However, politicians and the academics who brought that to you mostly worked with GW. Now, they brought Skunk number one off Hortifarm in 1998 when they started. And in 2001, there's actually a British Medical Journal document that states that GW were growing Skunk number one, Hindu Kush, Northern Lights, and some strain called Gloria, as well as a shedload of others for R&D purposes. Right. So it's interesting that it's recognized in that format. And then literally 3 years later, that's disguised. It means all full fat cannabis, shall we say, as opposed to the genetics that had been developed by Skunk Man Sam. And interestingly, Skunk Man Sam actually went to GW's facilities in 1998 and planted seeds from his own collection of Skunk number one to get them started.
You have also dropped enough terms and words there that I can see why you went to be a rapper in Germany. Skunk Man Sam, Skunk number one. I mean, these are all hits, man. This is Lou Bega hitting it off.
Craig, so let's look at the economics here, right? Because I mean, there's, you know, we've been talking about policy. We've been talking about the dark side of government and all these things. But if you look at the pure economics, right? So Germany's third largest economy in the world. They are, you know, they're not doing this for the benefit of society. They're doing this because there's potentially a huge tax benefit. Canada's obviously seen the benefit of that. I'll, you know, briefly, if you look at Thailand, you know, they went from, you know, decriminalizing to wanting to shut it down this year. And, you know, the ex prime minister gets involved, taxing Shinawa, and all of a sudden they're like, maybe we need to back off this idea that we're going to shut down weed after they look at the amount of dollars besides tourism it's pumping into the economy, which is actually massive. You know, how long can the UK, which is what, fifth or sixth largest economy in the world, watch someone like Germany, you know, benefit from this and not actually realize that there's a huge opportunity from, you know, a tax revenue perspective, where, you know, they want to, you've got a government's coming in with all these like nice little policies to make people happier. They've got to pay for it somehow. And this just seems like one of those easy ways to do it.
Absolutely. I think considering, obviously, I'm not going to say anything about why we were getting stuff put in our arms not so long ago. But when you look at the impacts on the economies worldwide, you know, the cost of living payments, have some money, hide in your house, and the likes of, it seemed like there was a bottomless money pit at that time. And you've got to kind of consider that at some point that money is going to be needed back. Because it wouldn't have just been stashed in your post office account for a rainy day. It would have had to have been used for something should we have not had the global craziness that we had. Now, Labour have basically gone into government with a little post-it note on the desk saying money is gone. right? Apparently that happened in 2007 when Tony Blair jumped in as well. But the thing is, how do you gauge how you're going to get that money back? We've had an interesting scenario announced today in regards to the junior doctors who have been on strike for a bit. They're going to get a 22% pay rise. Now, let's be honest, doctors are worth their salt. But what the government have done to actually allow that to happen is scrap all the winter fuel payments for all pensioners.
So and poor people, like, okay, poor people then get nailed in the gas, and then junior doctors get some money. But then those poor people, those old people, will freeze to death. And luckily,
so
they'll have a doctor to go to.
Will be working overtime to get their pennies. So that kind of indicates quite easily that there's a juggling act that needs to kind of occur. You know, are the government going to kind of push themselves into a corner? And say, oh, okay, then yeah, we are quite skint. Let's talk about cannabis. You'd like to hope that it's that easy.
Instead of waiting for the Liberal Democrats to get elected, pretty much.
Yeah, you know, the thing is, with political parties, they can say what they want, but if they get in power and they're informed immediately of a public-private partnership, then they won't do anything to jeopardize that. So where they turn around and say that they will legalize, I think that they're oversimplifying a situation that they know won't be simple.
It's like when Donald Trump said he was going to tell everyone about the UFOs, and then he got elected. He didn't tell us about the UFOs. I know we don't have a lot of time with you. I want to ask you some stuff before we shut her down, Kevin. But a bit of an idiocy, I guess, in the government, because the head of the Metropolitan Police, this guy Julian Bennett, right? He was smoking weed. His ex-roommate's like, he used to smoke weed every day before work. And they're like, okay, we need a drug test. He's like, yeah, I'm not doing that. And they put him on probation. So the head of the police, Metropolitan Police, pretty much has been smoking weed every day before work. And now is like, yeah, you're not going to test me for it. How does that instill confidence in the UK public for all of us to go, so we can't legalize it? And this guy can, the head of police can get stoned every day before work, but I can go to prison for it?
It's not just the police, though. Recently, there was a drugs culture identified in Parliament. I believe it was 2022. There was 22 arrests for possession of cannabis inside of the parliamentary estate. I have to double check that. But
there was a lot of coke, I know, going on there. They found traces of coke everywhere in Parliament.
Coke, without a doubt. But certainly when it comes to the sniff of the good herb, that's a little bit harder to hide than a little baggie of white powder. And the fact that, you know, we've got politicians in the place of power where they create laws to stop us doing these things are actually doing things themselves. Mm-hmm. I mean, yeah, the police, it is absurd with the police, without a doubt. But they're only upholding the laws. They're not the ones who are creating them. So, sure. So when you do hear of the drug culture in Westminster, it's like, how is it you guys can do that, but we can't?
We're gonna sort of finish her up here because we'd like to have you on another episode, Kevin. I'm gonna ask Craig if he's got, because Craig, obviously you got some questions. If something for Kevin here, because I know you've sort of been sort of quiet here. And
no, absorbing it, man.
Okay.
Good information. Well, I was took a quick look at your Hemp Hound page, and I see a lot. It's your supporting CBD. CBD is legal then in England, is it?
It is. It's defined. It's accepted as a food, and certainly it's defined as a novel food in that apparently it's not been eaten regularly before 1997. But then there's an issue because we all know where CBD comes from, and the government recognizes a consumption of hemp oils before 1997. So it's a little bit of an interesting scenario. We do have 12 controlled cannabinoids over here, 9 of which have no potential for abuse or the ability to induce a psychoactive event, so God only knows why they're illegal. But for some reason, CBD, it missed the boat.
Kevin, what can we do? Because we're going to finish up this episode. What can we all do? Because I'm really going to want to look into GW Pharmaceuticals now, and I want to see if we can get someone on here and have you on again. What can we all do here in the UK and worldwide to open up this conversation about the legalization of cannabis recreationally and medically in the UK?
I think you're missing a third option there, and that's where
space
the
camp
conversation.
Oh,
no, we need to recognize cannabis for exactly what it is. Yes, it's a recreational substance. Yes, it has medicinal potential, but cannabis is a food as well. And that's provable by the fact of how cannabinoids interact with the endocannabinoid system. So we need to kind of look at that inclusively. Now, we just had something over here, the big debate, you know, is cannabis recreational or medicinal? Like, and we've had people turning around and saying, oh, even recreational users are taking it in a medicinal context. They just don't know. But if that logic applies, then cannabis is always going to feed you before it gets you stoned or before it starts healing, so whatever it's there to heal. So recognition of cannabis in all of its contexts. We need to also talk about THC, because over here, right, it's defined as a contaminant, right? Up to a certain point, yeah, it'll get you stoned. But equally, below a certain point, it's still a food. Mm-hmm. So getting everything correct on a level table, we need to kind of discuss about how indica is supposedly the one that will get you super stoned and sativa isn't, when we all know that that's not the case. We need to get over the fact that ruderalis is supposed to be a squat plant, when we know that Vikings grew a ruderalis that could achieve 2 meters tall. There's a lot of misinformation that needs to be clarified. It needs to be addressed. And as soon as we can kind of bring that to the table and say to respective governments, like, look, this is the plan. You need to get off your reef of madness high horse, recognize for what it is. And by doing that, you are unlocking the potential of the plant in multiple contexts. Of course, like we're dealing with something that's got over 20,000 applicable uses, and food and medicine and recreational. Well, that's only three. Once we get past that conversation, that plant gets unlocked, and this world will be in a much better place.
It truly is a magical plant. And Kevin Jones, thank you very much for joining us. We'll put up your website and links and hope to have you in another podcast. Folks, thanks for listening to this episode of CannaBiz. We'll be back next week with another episode.
I said, no, I really smoked it. And I also inhaled, unlike some people claim.